six. And in terms of what the purpose of this session, it's on slide two. Really, I want to give you an overview of the activities and projects that form the Disclosure Initiative. And in particular, I want to get your feedback on one of the projects, the Principles of Disclosure Project, and whether the issues that we are addressing in there respond to your concerns about disclosures, whether there are any other topics within that project that we should be looking at, and whether what topics that are in that project are of actual interest to you. So I'll try and get through this overview quickly because we've been short of time, but if I move to slide four, this slide is trying to show you what we think the disclosure problem is. We had a discussion forum year before last now, and out of those discussions and the survey that we did, we felt that the disclosure problem was not just one problem. It's, I think, three broad problems, which is there's not enough of the right information in financial statements at the moment. There's too much irrelevant information, and that's disclosure overload. And also, I think there's a problem about poor communication. Now, I think from that, what we want to make sure that we emphasise, what the Disclosure Initiative is trying to do is make disclosures more effective, respond to all of those problems. This isn't just an initiative about addressing disclosure overload. We also want to make sure that we look to see, are there aspects of disclosures where we need more information? And I think importantly, how can we make disclosures better communicated? I think the I7 proposals, which form part of the Disclosure Initiative, are an example where we responded to requests to say that there isn't enough of the right information. If I move to slide five, this gives you an overview of the Disclosure Initiative, and it mirrors the slide that was in the previous presentation. And as we can see, we've grouped these and projects that form part of the Disclosure Initiative into the various aspects. So we completed some amendments on IS1 just before Christmas. We have our ongoing activities, which primarily relate to digital reporting and the work that we're doing on the IFRS taxonomy. I think there's a big relationship there that we need to sort of bring together. We also have the implementation project and IS7, which we've just talked about. But the focus of what I want to talk to you today is on the research projects, which are there in green on the right-hand side. And the next slide will go into a bit more detail about each of those. But before I do that, I also want to talk on slide six and spell out how the Disclosure Initiative fits within a couple of other important projects that we're undertaking in the at the ISB. So firstly, the conceptual framework, and that sets the overall objectives of financial statements and gives us a bit more information about the role of materiality and how we should classify and aggregate information, and also some principles for effective and efficient communication. But they're very high level, and they're primarily directed at the board when they set standards. So what we want to do in the Disclosure Initiative is build on those principles and bring them down to a standards level where they can be used by preparers and perhaps the board in some circumstances when they're actually applying standards or developing standards. So in the Disclosure Initiative, we want to be able to help entities determine the basic structure and content of their financial statements rather than the detail, but the basic structure of content. Performance reporting, and I think this is of interest to most people around the table, will really go into what is reported on the face of what we call the primary financial statements, so the line items and the subtotals. I think it will go more into what we would talk about, whether we need to define some commonly reported performance measures, and perhaps that idea of cohesiveness, how should the relationship of line items and subtotals on the face of the income statement and the cash flow statement primarily relate to each other. If I move now to an overview of our research projects, on slide eight, the first is the materiality project, and here we want to, the conceptual framework defines that information is material if omitting it or misstating it could influence decisions that the primary users of general purpose financial reports make on the basis of financial information about a specific reporting entity. So an investor or a user is quite sort of central to that decision, but ultimately it's a decision by the preparer or, and sometimes commented on by the auditor or the regulator. And this project responds to concerns that preparers ultimately aren't using judgment when they decide what to put in or not to put in their financial statements. And I think the result is twofold. It not only leads to too much information, which is sometimes how it's generally used, but it also means that perhaps they're not using that broad sense of materiality of putting some information which is material but not necessarily required in those financial statements. We're doing two things in response to this issue. We are firstly looking at how we describe materiality in our financial statements, so that definition that I read out earlier. The key sort of issue here is the threshold. So should something be disclosed if it could make a difference to an investor's decision, or other jurisdictions or regulators may think it should be a bit higher than that. You know, it probably would, or in likelihood it would make a difference. And some people think that raising that threshold will mean that there's a sort of a higher sort of hurdle to put information in financial statements. Secondly, what we're doing is producing a practice statement on materiality to provide some more material and examples to help entities make that judgment about whether information should be in or outside the financial statements. And at the moment, IFRS doesn't have something like that. Other regulators have had that type of guidance for some time. The next slide is...
Sorry, Christine, just before we move off materiality. As you say, one of the concerns is, or the main concern is, this failure to exercise judgment. Clearly, that is an issue potentially not just for the reporting entity, but also the auditors and their role in ensuring that judgment is indeed exercised. I know the board has had some contact in the past with the IAASB. Is that part of this process to try and bring in the audit standards to think on this?
Yes, it is, and it was on one of my speaker notes at the right at the bottom, which is we are having discussions with the IAASB and IOSCO and some other regulators as well, just to make sure that the work that we're doing really dovetails, if you like, or is consistent with the way that they think about materiality. So the IAASB has some auditing guidance at the moment, which they're actually looking at, and they've had some discussions about materiality. And so we've commented on theirs, and they're going to comment on ours. You know, what would be lovely, ultimately, is that when we come to a position where we think we have a product, that we could do something jointly with the IAASB, because I think the discussions about materiality may not always be the same when you talk from an auditor's perspective and a preparer's perspective, but they cross over considerably. And I think people's perception of them are the same. I think there's a lot of interaction that we could sort of build on with them. So the answer is yes, which is good. Actually, we have a call with them on Monday, actually, to go through our draft practice day.
I think users would really welcome that. I think, as you say, you're coming from different angles, but there must be some way in which those processes can mesh.
Yeah, and the practice statement is, as we said, materiality is about judgment and making a decision, and there's no clear-cut answers. And one of our hopes for this practice statement is it provides a basis for a better discussion between the auditor and the preparer and the regulator, and gives us a basis for talking more about it, because I think there's always an assumption that the auditor won't let you do something, or the regulator won't let you do something, and hopefully this will give a bit more of a chance or basis to say, well, no, I don't think it's material. So if I move to slide 9, which is about the principles of disclosure project, this project responds to a request for the ISB to develop a presentation and disclosure standard which deals with principles that apply across IFRS. And the ultimate aim is to replace, and I think we started off with replace, I think it's more like renovate, the disclosure requirements in primarily IS1, which is on presentation of financial statements, and IS8, which is accounting policies, changes and estimates. And again, we want to develop a presentation and disclosure standard that guides entities in making decisions about the basic structure. So what are my primary financial statements? What are the notes? How do I decide whether something should be on the face or in the notes? What level of detail do I have to go in there? What are some sort of fundamental principles? Like, can I cross-refer information from my notes to another part of my annual report? That's the sort of ultimate aim. Another possible outcome as we've gone through this process is that we may consider producing a communications guide, a bit similar to the plain English handbook published by the SEC. Because we've had discussions about communication and better formatting, which seems, most people we speak to seem positive, but I think there's been questions around the board whether that information is something that should be using the standard, but it could still be helpful. Now, the first step for this project is a discussion paper at the end of this year, and that sort of ties into why we're wanting to talk to you today, because we are wanting to get a sense from you before we end our discussions with the board, whether we're actually covering the right topics and giving the right points from an investor perspective. So if I move to slide 10, this gives you an overview of topics that we are going to discuss in the principles of disclosure discussion paper. I've highlighted those in green, which I think may be of particular interest to investors, in particular the communication principles, and there we'd be particularly interested in understanding whether the ISV should require information to be in specific formats and in particular tables, and I think there's some push in some regulatory bodies to produce tables and actually even some of our standards or recent discussions already. Secondly is non-IFRS information and alternative performance measures. We had a discussion with the board just a couple of weeks ago, and I think the tentative views from the board there were that we shouldn't prohibit the disclosure of alternative performance measures and non-IFRS information in financial statements, but we could try and provide more guidance which tries to ensure a fair presentation where those sort of disclosures are made. The other next point is cross-referencing. Again, initial view from the ISB is that we should permit entities to cross or to put information which is required by for IFRS purposes outside of the financial statements and use cross-referencing to incorporate it back into those financial statements. So we see that already for risk disclosures, where entities are permitted to put their risk disclosures, say, in the management commentary, where they're talking about risk, and cross-referring to that disclosure in their statements. We want, there's initial view from the board that we should make that a general permission, subject to some restrictions. One, I think that the key one being that it should be in the same, document, but in the annual reports we should be together. We feel that people don't want to go too far away to find that information, and to be clear about what we're cross-referencing plus some other criteria.
So there's I think we use the same terminology the auditors use. So there's a case of we're trying to get the same terminology so you don't get conflicts there.
The auditing guidance is actually more lenient than about cross-referring. I think their guidance would be really to cross-refer to same website. I think obviously a bit more reticence here, but that will be in the discussion paper of something we'll try and get some feedback on. And then finally, accounting policies. Again, no clear view from the board to date, but I think we need to. It's always been an area where we've heard a lot where disclosures could be improved, and I think we need to determine how exactly that should be done. And then finally, just a review of existing standards. So this is the final research project in our disclosure initiative. And here we want to undertake a review about existing standards or the disclosure requirements in those standards to identify areas where we could improve how they're written. So this is really about how do we write a better disclosure requirement where entities feel that they can use judgment, use a materiality to assess whether they make a disclosure, but still maintain that as sort of a good description of what is relevant information. And then we would look at existing disclosure requirements and standards, but we're also thinking to help us, the board, with this going forward, and the staff, is a guide to help us draft the standards and disclosure requirements in particular.
Remind me, the green bonds are the priorities, or what's the green?
So the purpose of today's discussion is that we do want to speak to investors prior to finishing the discussions on the discussion paper with the board, and these are the areas where we think we would like to speak to you about. We think they're the areas which are most interest to investors. And one of the questions I ask is, have we picked the right ones?
Can you those four.
those four?
Yeah, the four green ones.
Yeah. And are there others there that you think that may be of interest to you that we haven't picked? Just on slide 11, this project and this work about reviewing existing standards will be informed by the principles and the guidance we're trying to set in the principles of disclosure project. It's definitely going to be informed by where we get to along there, and it's a bit of an iterative process at the moment. If I move to slide 13, and this is maybe just coming back to your point, Martine, why were those 4 points in green? We want to obtain investor feedback on specific topics in the principles of disclosure project prior to publishing the discussion paper, and these are the items in slide 13 which we felt that we wanted to speak to particular investors about. Which then leads me to slide 14, which is the questions for you. So, looking at the disclosure initiative as a whole, do you think it responds to investors' concerns about disclosures? If not, why? And is our plan investor outreach for the Principles of Disclosure project pre the discussion paper targeting the topics that are of most interest to you? So are there any topics that you think are missing? Or do you have any other concerns that you would like the ISF to consider?
So first question on 14, are we covering the right topics as opposed to do you like what we're saying?
The 14 is about the disclosure initiative, and is it really addressing your concerns about disclosures? The second bullet is targeted at the principles of disclosure, and are we covering, is there things that we're missing out of that, should we have other topics? And if we go speak to you prior to the DP, is there anything else you think we need your input on before we get the board's attention?
So if I look at slide 10, does all the elements mentioned in slide 10 cover, because that's the disclosure initiative, I mean?
The disclosure initiative is actually broader, it covers materiality as well. So the disclosure initiative is summarised on slide 5.
Yeah.
And then slide 10 is drilling down to one of the projects in the disclosure initiative, which is the principles of disclosure, and that's the summary on slide 10.
So maybe go through the first one, so like look at slide 5 and ask that question, and then do the other question.
So if I take then Barbara's suggestion and we look at just slide 5, do you think this responds to investors' concerns about disclosures?
Missing from the whole disclosure discussion from my perspective is anything relating to forward-looking disclosures. Now, I'm not talking about management speculating about the future, but there are actually a lot of known facts about the future or key policies that management have formulated that are not disclosed in a very systematic way. So, and a lot of these really affect my forward modeling, so things like patent expirations, and to contractual payment streams, dividend policies that have been formulated, and the potential implications such as management compensation linked to dividend cover, all that sort of information. I feel that the disclosure is generally very, very good now, at least in pharma, when it comes to the historic information, but a lot of the key, like really mechanistic information that you need to ensure your model assumptions are actually correct mechanistically is missing.
Is that something you get from the financial statement? One of the issues we have to deal with is looking at the financial financial statements, which are generally historic looking and about assets that you need to know, but it's another element of the loan. The information that you're looking at, do you tend to get that from the financial statements or from the MD&A or other reports, or you prefer it to be in the financial statements?
I do see quite a few voluntary disclosures in some companies' financial statements, so specifically when it comes to patents, I mean, some people really have way in the back of their financial statement a huge table saying this is when the patent expirations are for each product in each geography, and others should say, oh, we don't talk about patents, and I spent forever trying to, you know, collate it from other sources. I don't really mind where it is located. It's just a problem, you know. I think if it only comes out in the Q&A sessions of the earnings calls, then it just makes it a lot more difficult to collate, and it might not be very consistent. In principle, I think it would be quite easy to always tie, you know, the known facts about the future to the historic statements. So if you're saying, okay, you know, our royalty income was X. And half of that is from a product which is going off patent in 2 years, and that's when we're going to lose, when that royalty stream is going to end. You could all kind of lump that together. Because this also relates to sort of like the presentation of the information. I just build my models line by line, so I start with product one, geography two, and so forth, then through the segments and so forth. So if all of the information that I need for each line is pretty much in one place, which I know is not really possible to achieve, but conceptually, the more it's in one place as opposed to scattered, it really helps.
Just on that point, that was part of the discussion. One aspect of that was part of our discussion last week about what is the scope of financial statements and forward-looking information, if I take the objective, is somewhat outside what we normally consider, but should we prohibit people putting that in to financial statements? And I think the view is that we wouldn't prohibit that sort of disclosure. Mainly to that point, that do people find it useful to have that information together? So stuff that might be forward-looking, that might tend to be in the management commentary, linked in with information which is historic in the financial statements, would users or investors find that useful to be together, because actually they don't necessarily mind with what's in the front or the back, but they like to see that story.
But I think Maria is saying there is speculative forward-looking information about future growth rates, we may succeed in this or that, and there's non-speculative or less speculative forward-looking information. That may very well be audited, you know, patent expiry, contractual obligations, as you say. So the less speculative, forward-looking information is something that could fall within the rigor of standard setting and auditing and reporting, and therefore may. There may be scope for including that in the financial statements, in the financial accounts. So that's, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And the key concern is really that a lot of it's just missing entirely. Like, you get a royalty number and you don't know what the underlying products are driving that, and you don't know when that royalty stream ends. So you can't actually, you know, your model is going to be mechanistically incorrect because you're just going to randomly make up numbers for the future.
So it's and it's difficult to maybe to oblige, you know, you will say, but it's maybe there still can be things done about
And still, I can't have an opinion about it. Like, a lot of the stuff in the management discussion, you know, we think the pricing pressure is going to continue or whatever. That's also stuff that, you know, if you're looking at a market segment on a day-to-day basis, you probably have your own opinion about that. But how can I have an opinion about what is actually written into contracts that I've never seen?
And adding to that, I think it would actually enhance, if you combine it with your notion that you can, by reference, include it in the financial statements, it would be great that the standard would strengthen up the credibility of information, prospective information, that is less speculative. So if certain, if it would add to the credibility of those of that part of the prospective information. So it could be very well be that companies voluntarily, if there were a standard for it, how what kind of demands and it is. That companies voluntarily say, we love to say we put this forward-looking, non-speculative information according to the standard of the ASB in our annual report.
So it's at the top of you would like the board to consider writing disclosure requirements to.
And just to follow on that, if you look at the revisions to IAS 19, you could argue that a precedent was set because if a company is expected to make cash contributions to a pension plan in the years to come, that's something that they can include now in the footnote disclosure. And you could argue that that's forward-looking information.
It's really interesting because that is the very item that FASB recommended taking out because it was forward-looking. They asked investors if they should do that. I've got to tell you what the investors said, you know.
Probably not.
And so did the preparers because they said data was useful as well.
Anyone else? Okay.
Move to the second question then.
So it's confirmative that it's probably in line with what the investor wants.
I didn't know whether to take silence. So if I move to slide 10.
We take it how we want it.
Take what you can get.
So if I move to slide 10 then, the question here is our planned outreach to the principles of disclosure project targeting the topics that would be most of interest to you? And then maybe looking beyond the green squares, whether you think some topics are missing, and or there are other topics that you would like to discuss.
Well, if I may, Rob first.
Just there's a quick list of topics that I, and I'm not sure whether these are disclosures, but let's just assume these are there. Things that are missing on this page that might be useful is the concept of syndication. Balance sheet to cash flow to income statement. So a disclosure standard should encourage the disclosure in an obvious fashion of the linking of statements. You've heard previously that there's a group of people that would actually the ideal statement would be the balance sheet, income, cash flow, then the balance sheet, and that sort of grid. Because that actually is how that sort of multiple columns is the way we think. So we do not think the way it's presented. We really do think those columns. And if we can't follow balance sheet to balance sheet, we're confused. And one of the reasons we need that information is we're using that information to make sure we understand. So if something isn't tying, we don't know whether it's because it just doesn't tie or whether we fundamentally have missed something. So the linkage. The other thing is that I think is missing on this is the whole concept of how you disclose estimates. We talked about policy at length, but estimates are a real. We need a lot more information about the estimates, the assumptions that go into the financial statements, and how you deal with those changes in estimates. So the honest gnome at the preparer who gives the best estimate today on something, and it could be fair value, it could be anything, and then they are asked to do it in 3 months, and they come back and say, well, that's not the right number anymore. That's actually healthy. I'm not worried, that's not an error, that's just it's healthy, but we need to know how that changed, because what happens is you have hundreds of these things, and how they get aggregated into final results. You need to explicitly think about estimates.
And sensitivities around estimates as well.
Yes, and it becomes a whole. Then the question is how we do it. Is it sensitivities? Is it tables? There's a lot of stuff that goes with it. But absolutely sensitivities. In some cases, you can give people enough information so they can sort of calculate it. But in other cases, particularly when we talk about, so I'll use an example. In the mining industry, 10 years ago, they developed a table that basically says you don't need to give sensitivities because you can give enough data so they actually can get the number they need. But in the case of financial instruments and derivatives, there are too many variables to be able to do it, so you have to give sensitivities.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to copy Robert's comment on linkage. I think it's so, you just in one verse explained what I also feel is like the starting balance, the results, cash flow, and then the closing balance, basically, that it should all be linked. It's how that gives you the true insight.
My recollection was that you've got some linkage thinking inside the communication principles, right?
We do. it's about making sure that information throughout the financial statements, you can see the connections through them. We didn't go as far as to linkage across the primary financial statements,
which
I think is what you're getting. What we did discuss at some point was whether that linkage that you set at the primary statement level should be pushed down to the notes as well. So, for example, if you were going to set a linkage, say, for operating, financing, investing, as seems to be one example that comes up a lot, should your disclosures also follow that type of grouping or story or connection at the same time? So,
but I'd like to highlight Robert's specific remark about the primary financial statement.
Which is something we're looking at doing or would consider as part of the performance reporting project, because it does, it really relates to what subtotals and line items you're going to put on the face of whatever statement and how that drives the relationship with the other statements. We were doing some work on cash flows as part of the disclosure initiative, but we came across this same problem that talking about line items and how that's presented or some of the disclosures around that is so interrelated to both the income statement and the balance sheet that we felt that work needed to move up to be more related to where we're talking about those statements rather than the broader basic structure, which is what this project is looking at.
Peter?
I think you're on the right track. I think the topics in the green frames are the ones that I'm most interested in. And just to give you a view from Sweden, I'm not at all interested in this linkage that you're talking about.
You have not at all.
You're linked anyway.
Yeah, I think that was a mistake from the beginning to the end. You don't get any support from me for that linkage package.
It would be too insightful.
It mustn't be too easy to be an
analyst. It should be complicated to analyze financial statements.
Yeah.
That's certainly not.
No, I'm satisfied with the structure that we have today. I don't want to rearrange all my spreadsheets and a guy from Holland wanted linked and another one from Canada wanted linked. No, please, no. It would take me years.
Gotta keep the professional business, is that what you're saying?
You need to be at a high barrier to entry for
confidential
business.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's necessary.
Marietta, please.
I just have two things I want to flag that are just very important to me. The first is that whenever people complain about information overload, I would really like to ask you to try and resolve that as much as possible through changes in presentation and not by removing information. Because I'm increasingly getting the impression that preparers think that if they actually take out some of the numbers and the sheets are less dense, then our job is a lot easier. And I think the reverse is true. I mean, what makes my job hard is not too many numbers, but inferring the numbers or trying to get to the numbers that they're not disclosing. And I really think that if you do, when numbers are presented, especially in tabular format on one page, people who are not interested can just skip that page, so that should really create information overload. And the second thing is just on materiality. I think it's very important that we don't interpret that as, would that one item in isolation be relevant to an investment decision, but
what would happen if you, basically there are 20 items of the size and you don't have them, and so therefore you get them all wrong. And the thing is, particularly in pharma, you have very fragmented businesses, and you know the sales of different drugs in different countries don't correlate at all. So you know, if there are sort of 20 data points that they withhold and each one is 1% of sales, then you know, theoretically, I might get 20% of the forecasted sales wrong, which means I'm going to get 50% of the earnings wrong, which is going to create a huge problem. So I think you know, the threshold should be very, very low.
I think there's two points to that. One about how the decision about whether something is material or not has to consider how it affects our mix of the information that's provided. And I think materiality isn't just materiality of one item, it can be collectively as well.
Okay.
And I think what we need to try and explain is both those aspects a bit better than I think they're very briefly explained in IFRS at the moment.
Okay.
Robert.
I'm fascinated by the conversation of materiality. Materiality should be what is material for users in making decision, making capital allocation decisions. It should not be based on what the auditors are worried about if they get sued. And that really is the problem. The materiality that we get is completely irrelevant to us.
For example, a Shell has a 1.7 billion materiality level. Do I care whether the cash position is 1.7, 1.6 billion more or less? Yes, I do. Or I mean, it depends on what line item it is. I mean,
if the materiality affects management's integrity, it's vanishingly small.
Yeah.
You know, so it really depends on what would change the valuation model.
I think one of the few things that we want to bring out is that, as I mentioned earlier, that the audit materiality, and often we talk about audit thresholds when we talk about materiality, that's not the way it's defined or should be used in IFRS. It's a judgment. It's about whether you disclose something or not. And that is not just a quantitative assessment. It's a qualitative. It's ultimately a qualitative assessment. Quantity can be one of those qualities, but ultimately it's a qualitative assessment. And I think one of the things that we would hope to do is re-own this idea of materiality and separate it from a percentage threshold, which often auditors use to make sure that they're accumulating known errors, etc., and separate that discussion.
You mentioned re-own, that materiality should be defined by the ISB, not by the audit profession. And it shouldn't be, you know, you're saying, well, we'll compare notes. The right answer is, we're going to tell them what material it is, and then they can go figure out their insurance policies. I'm very little patience for this issue. Okay?
I think if any of the other boxes should be turned green, I think it's the aggregation and the materiality. I mean, aggregation, if we remember how we gave feedback on IFRS 8, that we are troubled by how line items are aggregated, and aggregation has been a concern of investors, not because there are some companies that provide decent aggregation, but there are also too many companies that do not provide decent aggregation.
And disaggregation. Is that because what you think is material information is obscured by that aggregation? As in,
yeah. So I think, probably we need a little bit more on the short-term initiatives, because we have inspirational stuff. You talk to us and we have inspirational stuff, and it would be great that, like on the next meeting, we can report, okay, based on the feedback of the CMAC, we did another short-term initiative on this particular issue. For example, the gross debt period, and there should be more scope for that as well, just along the way, without upsetting the entire world.
Mm. Christy, could you just explain what the proportionality segment is?
It's a discussion about whether there should be a reduced disclosure regime for certain types of entities or certain situations. it's about, I think it's called, in some jurisdictions where they say subsidiaries that are under a certain amount and don't have any fiduciary type obligations don't have to disclose as much as others. You know, we have in our own standards, I think IFRS 8 only applies to listed companies that submit reporting. because standard setters in particular have asked that we consider that. We haven't gone to the board on it, but my reading of the board's prior discussions about being selective by any type of entity or size of entity, they wouldn't want to sort of make amendments, but I think we do need to have that discussion.
I think it's an absolute non-starter that mid-caps, for example, we get given reduced reporting requirements, but the reason we use the word proportionality is we know that some disclosures seem to be more burdensome in terms of cost benefit.
Mm.
And if you can help if you're going to help everybody by reducing their costs, and you can identify the ones that are disproportionately burdensome for the mid caps and lower, you'll help them even more. So we're trying to get a better sense of cost benefit that reflects proportionality. It's a bit like they feel punished by the segment reporting because they think, well, I'm a single sort of simple organisation, you're not going to do all the stuff that the big boys don't have to do. They sort of much higher level.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of match.
Okay.
With that, I'd like to thank